everyone. Welcome to the Divided Kingdom. I'm Lou Caraboli. Elizabeth Cuppet Caraboli and I are bringing you vital news from a Christian mom-and-pop America viewpoint. Recently, we commented that Time magazine columnist Ian Bremmer revealed Turkey's Erdogan wanted Fethullah Gulen extradited from the United States to Turkey. Why are we keeping Gulen here? Ensconced is described fully in Paul L. Williams' crucial book, Crescent Moon Rising. Very troubling is the fact Gulen is safely protected in a Salisbury, Pennsylvania compound, according to whistleblower Sybil Edmonds, CIA-linked. People not far away hear automatic weapons firing. What is this training compound for? A one-time jihad somewhere down in the future of America? Even more troubling is the network of Gulen schools throughout the U.S. under names like Magnolia Science Academies, Sonoran Science Academies, Horizon and Lisa Academies, and more. Gulen is operating what we must fear, a school for indoctrination into radical Islam jihad. Now, here's a counterpart in Great Britain. From The Telegraph, March the 2nd, 2018. Islamic school where teacher tried to raise army of jihadist children was judged outstanding by Ofsted. Ofsted, and I presume that is some sort of organization in Britain, Ofsted marked a fee-paying Islamic school as outstanding while one of its teachers was trying to raise a quote-unquote army of jihadi children, it can be revealed. Uma Haque, 25, has been convicted of plotting to attack iconic British landmarks, such as Big Ben and Heathrow Airport. But police have said he was also aiming to recruit children from the two schools and the mosque where he taught in East London to carry out future jihad in the United Kingdom. Haque was employed as an administrator and religious education teacher at the private Lantern of Knowledge Secondary School in Leighton, East London, between September 2015 and September 2016. During the period he was at the school, he received glowing Ofsted reports, with inspectors praising its, quote, strong sense of community, harmony, and respect, unquote. Haque also worked at the Liverpool Road Mosque in Barking, which was attended by London Bridge terrorist Karoum Butt, as well as the Hafs Academy in Newham. Army of Children. Commander Dean Hayden, head of the Metropolitan Police's Counterterrorism Command, said, quote, he abused his position at those two venues, and he tried, and he did, we believe, radicalize vulnerable children from the ages of 11 to 14. His plan was to create an army of children to assist with multiple terrorist attacks throughout London. His plans, though ambitious, were aspirational. They were long-term attack plans, unquote. Nobody at any of the institutions raised the alarm, and Mr. Hayden also suggested they had failed to cooperate fully with the investigation. Haque came onto the police's radar in April 2016 when he was stopped at Heathrow trying to board a plane for Turkey. Despite having his passport revoked by the Home Office, he continued to work at the Lantern of Knowledge until the September of that year. On January 24th last year, he was caught driving without insurance, and police again began to look into his activities, at which point they discovered evidence pointing to his desire to radicalize youngsters. It can now be revealed that Haque had access to 250 children aged between 11 and 14 and tried to radicalize more than 100 of them by showing extremist videos, including beheadings. Haque warned the children they would meet a similar fate if they told anyone about his plans as he prepared them for, quote-unquote, martyrdom. He planned to teach the children to drive as they got older, Mr. Hayden said, adding, quote, his intention was those children would help him carry out multiple attacks across London. It was a long-term plan, unquote. A total of 35 children are now receiving long-term safeguarding support from social services, supported by the police, local authorities, and the Home Office. The court heard from a young boy on a video-recorded police interview. He said, quote, he is teaching us terrorism, like how to fight. If you fight for the sake of Allah on Judgment Day, when you get judged for your good deeds and bad deeds, fighting is good. He wants a group of 300 men. He's training us now, so by the time I'm in year 10, we will be physically strong enough to fight, unquote. Mr. Hayden said police had been met with a wall of silence when they had attempted to investigate Hake's activities. He added, quote, we found no evidence at the moment that any individual raised concerns within the schools. It certainly wasn't reported to the police or authorities. Children were paralyzed by fear. There was a wall of silence. Describing Hake's plans, Mr. Hayden said, quote, he tried to prepare the children for martyrdom by making them role-play terrorist acts. So terrorist acts that had taken place in and around London. He added, he told them he had significant connections with ISIS. He'd show them pretty shocking videos of beheadings involving serious injury, murder, mostly overseas. He threatened them that if they were to talk to teachers, parents, or to allude to anybody outside of that classroom what was going on, they would meet a similar fate. It doesn't appear that any of those children raised the alarm bell of what was going on, unquote. Mr. Hayden said this presented challenges for the police in trying to understand what was going on in those institutions. Mr. Hayden went on, quote, it was apparent that he was in the early stages of this long-term attack plan, that he intended would take place at multiple sites using multiple weapons, assisted by children that he had radicalized at those three locations, unquote. Ofsted and the local education authority were involved with the schools, while the mosque is subject to an ongoing Charities Commission investigation. But an Ofsted inspection, which took place when Hake was working there, heaped praise on the Lantern of Knowledge, which charges fees of £3,000 a year. The report stated, quote, pupils speak with pride about their faith and are accepting and understanding of those with other beliefs and lifestyles, even when they are at odds with the central teachings of their own faith, unquote. But while the Ofsted report from the period Hake was teaching there was outstanding, a subsequent emergency inspection that took place in December of 2017, after he had been charged and was awaiting trial, described it as needing improvement in every area. Mr. Hayden said, quote, he was a very dangerous man. It is a concern what he was doing. He is radicalizing children. He shouldn't have been teaching. He's not a qualified teacher. That's a concern in the first place, unquote. A statement issued on behalf of the school's Board of Trustees said, quote, the Lantern of Knowledge Educational Trust treats the safety and welfare of pupils with the utmost importance. It adheres to the Department for Education statutory guidance for the safe recruitment of staff. The Trust regularly reviews its policies and procedures around the recruitment of its staff to ensure that they are robust and legally compliant. Those involved in the recruitment of staff also undergo training to ensure statutory requirements are adhered to. The Trust works closely with third-party organizations to maintain the safety of our pupils and assist with any lawful inquiries made by relevant authorities, unquote. But Scotland Yard has raised concerns over the level of cooperation officers got from all the institutions Hake was involved with. Mr. Hayden said, quote, there were no reports from teachers or the children into the school, I should be in the school, that raised concerns about Hake himself, unquote. Referring to Lantern of Knowledge, he said, we spoke to parents. As you can imagine, they were as concerned and probably horrified as we were. It's a fee-paying school. Parents are paying a significant amount of money to send their children to a school where they would expect them to be safe and to be taught by fully qualified teachers. In this case, they weren't. As a result, that's why we intervened as early as we could, unquote. Warped ideology. Ofsted's Deputy Chief Inspector, Matthew Coffey, said, it is of deep regret that this individual was able to work within the independent school system and expose his warped ideology to children. Umar Hake engaged in highly sophisticated grooming of young, vulnerable children. We welcome the conviction and are fully supportive of the work taking place across government to ensure people like Hake aren't able to do this again. Ofsted is committed to protecting children from harm, including radicalization. However, our ability to do so is hampered by limitations on our powers. We have no ability to inspect out-of-school settings, such as madrasas, and we believe greater powers in this area could help keep children safe in the future. We know the government is keen to address these matters and welcome their commitment to closer working.
Is the government keen to stop this? This is Elizabeth Cubitt-Caverly, the Lantern of Knowledge School in Great Britain. And here we have Fethullah Gulen Schools, the Sonoran Academy, the Science Academies, the Lisa Academy, the Horizon Science Academies, and some others of the same ilk with different names. Are we going to tolerate this if they're in your state? And they probably are. There were a lot of them in Texas. You really want to open your eyes. We've got to open our eyes. And a major reason Lou and I are going into debt year after year to produce the Divided Kingdom, the mom and pop radio program that many of you really look forward to hearing, because you don't have any commercials and you do get hard-hitting truth from a Christian viewpoint. Some of you out there, if you can help us, we really would need some contributions this month, and it could be a little cash in an envelope. It could be a check made out to WWCR. We can't take checks personally, but any amount will be helpful. And we know that some of you have sacrificed greatly. We know that someone in the West sent us a small check, and that person lives without electricity and so really doesn't have heat. Imagine that. That's like the poor widow with her mite. And we really pray God's blessing greatly on that man, because he was giving. He almost gave his all to us, and we know that Jesus Christ really loves that. So if you would like to help us stay on the air or send us letters of encouragement, you can write to Lou, capital L-O-U, Caverly, capital C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, just as in the Bible, Maryland, 21609. And again, the box is 28. The town is Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. It's really astounding to us. After the program we had on March 1st, and you will want to go to our archives, thedividedkingdom.org, if you didn't hear this program, thedividedkingdom.org, because we talked about that deputy sheriff, and his name again was Nizar Hamzi, and all of his Muslim connections, and the one who stood down. And what in the world can this mean but a Trojan horse in America? In our police departments, in our sheriff's departments, we have an inside job going on, part two. It wasn't just 9/11. No, we have the Islamic radical jihad invasion of America. It's like quiet weapons, silent wars, or silent weapons, quiet wars. Either way you want to take it, it's coming under the guise of we're going to have intercultural activities, multiculturalism, interfaith. We mustn't step on anyone's toes. But we're looking at the aftermath of the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. And the AP said on February 23rd, 2018, Tallahassee AP, the armed officer on duty at the Florida school, where a shooter killed 17 people, never went inside to engage the gunman and has been placed under investigation, officials announced Thursday. The school resource officer at the high school took up a position viewing the western entrance of the building that was under attack for more than 4 minutes, but, quote, he never went in, end of quote. Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel said in a Thursday news conference the shooting lasted about 6 minutes. The officer, Scott Peterson, was suspended without pay and placed under investigation, then chose to resign, Israel said. Then we followed the story, and on February 26th, there was another editorial, and this came out of the New Bern Sun Journal. FBI failed a basic job on Florida shooter. The horrifying news broadened 2 days after Nicholas Cruz, armed with an AR-15, entered Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland and slaughtered 14 students and 3 teachers and injured several more. In a stunning admission, the FBI announced Friday that a person close to Cruz contacted the department on January 5th to report concerns about Cruz's disturbing behavior. That's 6 weeks ago. The person had done what we ask citizens to do. If you see something, say something. Yet the Bureau did absolutely nothing with the information. Not a thing. It was an unforgivable lapse, and it became a deadly one. There's a double standard here, Lou. When you drive on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, haven't you seen something like that sign to speak up?
Oh, yes. I've seen those signs many times. I've seen them on the big overhead signs that light up with messages. From time to time, we'll have that very message and other signs in many, many different venues all over the eastern shore of Maryland.
Now, those signs are for the common man. They're not for the elite. And, yes, we're happy that some people will get higher pay raises. We hope that this was a good move by Trump. Lou actually saw $37 more in his paycheck. And then what did I read? There was a huge global bank, I believe, that got something like $57 billion out of it. So you see, we do get the crumbs. That doesn't mean I'm not grateful. Every $37 helps us get our groceries so that we can continue this program. But my point is that we have a lot of hypocrisy. We're told to speak up if we see anything dangerous. But then what happens with it? It's an insincere attempt to make us think that they have our best interests at heart, but it really is leading to tyranny and worldwide NWO control. So back to this article, it said it was an unforgivable lapse and it became a deadly one. We have spoken with victims and families and deeply regret the additional pain this causes all those affected by this horrific tragedy, FBI Director Christopher Wray said in a statement. Quickly, Florida Governor Rick Scott called on Wray to resign. By admitting its error before it was discovered by outsiders, the FBI came clean and said it did not appropriately follow established protocols with the tip to its public lying. Even more damning, agents didn't bother to pass on the information to the Miami field office, so no further action was taken until after Cruz opened fire and his name popped up again in the FBI's files. There's no way to credibly say, oh, we'll do better next time. The FBI also was warned in September about a school shooting threat from a YouTube user with Cruz's name. According to a Mississippi video blogger, Ben Benight said he reported the post to the FBI. It said, I'm going to be a professional school shooter, and it came from a user named Nicholas Cruz. Benight said FBI agents talked to him, but the agency said it could not track down the owner of the social media handle. Yet Cruz flaunted his social media persona. He definitely didn't hide it. Now again, Lou, does this look like incompetence or design?
Well, that's a good question. To me, it looks like design. Looks like they had no intention of thwarting this young man, and that they had no desire to take steps.
And we always bring up Oswald and the JFK business, but this is what they do when there's a patsy. If the Bureau had dug just a little further, it would have found that local law enforcement responded to Cruz's former family home on 39 occasions over a 7-year period. And this editorial also says it's an infuriating act of negligence, and this means to the FBI, referring to it, by a government agency charged with protecting Americans. And it came at such a painful human cost. The parents and loved ones of those killed must now cope with knowing that maybe it could have all ended before the bloodshed without families being torn apart, just maybe. And this fact here that the local law enforcement went to the Cruz home 39 times over 7 years, this before Cruz went to live with the parents of one of his few high school friends. Broward's Sheriff Scott Israel said it wasn't immediately clear why the officers had been called to the house. Israel also defended the FBI. Make no mistake about it, America, Israel said at a news conference, the only person responsible is the shooter himself. Now, the editorial says that's true and so forth and so on. We don't think that is true. We have those clips of Alexa Mednick and others who were walking along, and they heard multiple shooters. So there's a lot more to this story that we don't know about, probably. And, you know, Time magazine was even bringing up the NRA that possibly they have to drum up business now. We saw that the Dick's Sporting Goods store will not be selling any guns, but this strange scenario that Time magazine was presenting was that they're going to use these efforts to get gun control in Congress so that it will frighten the populace more, the way they were frightened when Obama came into office, because gun sales are down so low. You know, it gets stranger and stranger. What did they say in Macbeth about the web, the tangled web?
Well, I don't know the source, but it's something about, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. I think that's how it goes.
Shakespeare knew human nature pretty well. In fact, we realize that there's so much going on that's part of an agenda, and we see that moving to France. France's latest crackdown on Islamic radicalization marks a U-turn from previous attempts. This was Alina Burton, special to the Washington Times, Wednesday, February 28, 2018. And we'll just give you a little of this. Rocked by a string of Islamist terror attacks capped by a deadly rampage in the heart of Paris in late 2015, French President Emmanuel Macron's administration this week set out tough new measures to crack down on Islamic radicalization in schools, prisons, and online. But hopes here that the new policies will work aren't high. It's the third such plan French officials have floated just in the past 4 years. Amid fears that French-born recruits to Islamic State may be making their way home after the terror group's battlefield defeats, the state's multiple plans are seen as symbolic of France's struggles to deal with the largest Muslim population in Western Europe and to assimilate disaffected young Muslims into French society and culture. Since the first anti-radicalization plan was floated in 2014, militants have been blamed for the deaths of some 240 people in attacks in Paris, Nice, and elsewhere. This time, the authors insist, will be different. The new plan is much better because it addresses prevention, said Nathalie Goulet, a senator with the centrist Union Center-Right parliamentary group. Quote, previous measures mostly focused on criminal regulation, which didn't solve the problem, end of quote. Without providing details on costs, the government will invest in training teachers to detect the early signs of radicalization among students and debunk conspiracy theories and fake news spread through social media, said Prime Minister Edouard Philippe in Lille, a city in northern France, when he announced the new policies on February 23rd. And they go on to say in this article that up to 30% of French youth between the ages of 18 and 24 don't believe that Islamist terrorists were responsible for the attack against the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo in January 2015. And so this is a very big question. Why don't they believe in that? Do they believe that there was some kind of an inside job, something like the equivalent to 9/11 in America in September 11, 2001? I don't know. So is this, again, just a opposed kind of solution to keep the masses quiet and believing that government really wants to do something? We don't know here. We're in America. We have enough trouble here. But they say the new measures will also introduce tighter regulations for private and religious schools, including Islamic schools whose number has grown rapidly in the last few years. Quote, while the state has to guarantee to parents the freedom to choose their children's education, it is absolutely essential that we understand that certain private schools, where there is literally very little control, have caused great damage by teaching an ideology that is in total contradiction with the values of the French Republic, said Simone Rodin-Benzaquin, director of the American Jewish Committee in France. Once these kids are radicalized, it is very difficult to reverse the damage. Though traditionally a Catholic country, France is a non-religious republic where citizens are theoretically equal before the law, regardless of their national origin, race, or faith. An estimated 5.7 million Muslims live in the country, according to the Pew Research Center. Although the strictly secular French census does not ask respondents about their religion, race, or ethnicity. For the first time, the government is also taking new steps to reform prisons that have become hotbeds of Islamist radicalization. Radicalized inmates were previously dispersed among other prisoners. Now they will be housed in separate, sealed-off areas to prevent the exchange of radical ideas. French prisons currently hold 512 people charged with acts of terrorism, as well as over 1,100 inmates who have been identified as radicalized. So they go on to say that there are some similar initiatives in Denmark, and they're going to be setting up three centers to screen jihadists and help reintegrate other French citizens who are coming back from ex-war zones. And they're going to invest in the psychological care of former fighters' children. So we'll see how that whole experiment works, whether it's wholehearted or whether it's just see something, say something, but it's all one-sided. And this article from the Washington Times says, the latest measures mark a U-turn from previous security plans, which critics said lacked comprehensive strategies and failed to deal with the causes of radicalization. The country's first and only de-radicalization center was shut down in 2017 after less than a year because it failed to attract volunteer participants. The center cost around $3 million. Now, I would think in a country with the global statistics that we have about the wealth of countries, isn't this absolute peanuts that they'd have a de-radicalization center that costs $3 million staffed by volunteers, Lou?
Well, that just goes to show that they don't want to do much about it. Two expensive houses might cost $1 million in this country, and they can't afford a staff. They have to have volunteers. What could be more ridiculous? That just goes to show they have no intention of putting forth any real program.
Then we have the perennial scourge of politics, corruption. The article says the country's another de-radicalization program that had been outsourced but to a non-governmental organization ended in failure when the group's former president received a suspended sentence for embezzlement of public funds. The renewed anti-radicalization drive comes as Mr. Macron has proposed hardening France's immigration and asylum system. Mr. Macron's legislation, which lawmakers will debate in the spring, aims to speed up the process for asylum requests, double to 90 days the time a person without papers can be kept in holding centers, and criminalize illegal border crossings. Now, back to our country, it was little noted on February 14th, because of the shooting at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, but we had a little note here of a bomber getting life in prison for New York and New Jersey attacks. How about that, Lou? Larry Neumeister in the AP. And this, again, was on Valentine's Day.
A New Jersey man who set off small bombs in two states, including a pressure cooker device that blasted shrapnel across a New York City block, was sentenced Tuesday to multiple terms of life in prison by a judge who repeatedly called it a miracle nobody was killed. Ahmad Khan Rahimi, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Afghanistan, was criticized by a prosecutor for failing to show remorse and was scolded by a victim for not apologizing to the 30 people he injured. U.S. District Judge Richard M. Berman in Manhattan said it was hard to reconcile the, quote, reasonable enough, unquote, man he saw in court with a terrorist who tried to kill as many people as he could when he left his home early in the morning of September 17th, 2016, with two pressure cooker explosives and a bag full of smaller bombs. Berman said, Again, this is the judge. Berman said, quote, you sound like most people, and yet your actions are totally at odds with your voice. We saw videos, he said, referencing multiple videos at his fall trial that showed Rahimi dragging bombs in two suitcases and a backpack through Manhattan streets, setting one down a half hour before it exploded in the upscale Chelsea neighborhood, and another a few blocks away that was discovered and disabled before it could explode. Berman said, quote, it's really hard to square the way you appear in court to that other behavior, unquote. Regardless, the judge said, Rahimi deserved multiple life prison terms. One life term was mandatory, but the judge exercised his discretion by imposing life sentences for counts that Rahimi's defense lawyer said deserved only a 15-year sentence. He also ordered $562,803 in restitution. Berman called Rahimi, 30, a clear and present danger and said it was too big a risk not to impose a life sentence, especially after Rahimi offered, quote, not an ounce of justification, unquote, for his crimes. The Chelsea explosion happened just hours after a small pipe bomb exploded along a Marine Corps road race in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, frightening participants but injuring no one. The bombings triggered a two-day manhunt that ended in a shootout with police in Linden, New Jersey. Rahimi was shot several times but survived. Police officers also were injured. Given a chance to speak, Rahimi, shackled at the ankles, portrayed himself as a victim, saying he came to America as a seven-year-old boy with no hatred for anyone and was raised by a father in a household where there was no mention of what his father experienced during the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. He described how his father went to law enforcement on multiple occasions to report suspicious behavior he had seen in his son, but ultimately felt let down. Quote, I don't harbor hate for anyone, Rahimi said before describing how he believed law enforcement targeted him once he became a practicing Muslim. Assistant U.S. Attorney Sean Crowley immediately followed Rahimi, saying he had just, quote, blamed everyone else, unquote, after causing so much destruction through crimes fueled by hate. Crowley said, he has shown no remorse. He is proud of what he has done. She described Rahimi's efforts to radicalize fellow prisoners at the federal jail in New York, where he has been imprisoned since his arrest. Rahimi, prosecutors said, gave inmates copies of terrorist propaganda and jihadist materials, including speeches and lectures by al-Qaeda founder Osama bin Laden and Anwar al-Awlaki, a U.S.-born cleric who inspired attacks on Americans and was killed in a U.S. airstrike in September 2011. Rahimi also allowed some inmates to view materials on his laptop or provided electronic copies as he spread, quote, the Book of Jihad, unquote, bomb-making instructions, and various issues of a propaganda magazine. Defense attorney Xavier Donaldson called it ironic that his client had once aspired to be a police officer and worked as a security guard after studying criminal justice at a community college. He urged a sentence not based on what people think terrorists might inspire or the fear they may cause. After the sentence was announced, Berman invited several victims watching the proceedings to speak. Pauline Nelson, 48, of Brooklyn, stepped to the podium. She was hospitalized when the car she was driving was jolted by the explosion. She is still being treated for muscle spasms in her back, she said, staring at the bearded Rahimi, who sat at the defense table, shackles on his ankles, quote, you never apologize to anyone in the courtroom. You have no remorse for what you did.
China and India are taking some steps. It's interesting, and on September, or I guess this really was August 24, 2017, and it came from the Middle East Media Research Institute, and it's an excerpt. On August 22, 2017, the Supreme Court of India delivered a landmark verdict invalidating the practice of instant triple divorce, and that's Talaq, spelled T-A-L-A-Q, among Indian Muslims. The verdict is a milestone in the journey of the Muslim women's rights in India. Prior to this decision, a Muslim husband could divorce his wife by uttering talak three times in the presence of two witnesses in one sitting. Oh, Lou, how easy it would be to get rid of me.
Well, don't give me ideas.
We have to joke a little bit. We really do value each other, and we value our marriage very much. But isn't this insane? So, you know, this guy could just say goodbye, wifey, by saying talak three times in the presence of two witnesses in one sitting, either informally or formally, through a letter, email, WhatsApp, and so on. This instant form of divorce is called talak-e-bidat, is irrevocable, and is valid in Sharia law. The other form of triple talak is called talak-e-hasan, whereby a husband delivers one talak each over the course of 3 months. You can be lazy, Lou.
Yeah, I guess I'll take the slow way.
Slow boat to China. And we'll be bringing up China. Boy, they're keeping a close eye on their Muslims, too. At the same time, the head of China is now going to be like Mao. Really scary. Control like an emperor. But anyway, we must now get back to this practice. This practice of instant triple talak, abolished by 22 Muslim nations, had emerged as a social disease in India in recent years. Jamiat Ulema, I believe that would be E-Hind, which is a leading organization of Indian Islamic scholars, was defiant. Maulana Mahmood Madani, general secretary of the Jamiat Ulema E-Hind, warned, regardless of the court ruling, the practice of talak, including instant triple talak, will continue in the country and will be considered valid. Leading Islamic scholars at the Darul Uloom Deoband, the second largest Islamic seminary after Cairo's Al-Azhar University, were disturbed by the verdict. As per a report in the Urdu Times, the scholars of Deoband, while describing the court verdict as perplexing, warned that no interference in Sharia will be tolerated. Mufti Abdul Qasim Nomani, chancellor of Darul Uloom Deoband, said that the triple talak is purely a Sharia issue in which no amendment can be affected. Muhammad Saeed Nouri, the general secretary of the Mumbai-based Raza Academy, criticized the verdict, saying, if a law is made which is against Sharia, then it will be unacceptable to us. And like such other laws, it too will meet the same fate, that it will remain a law but will not be followed. Sayyid Parvez Quasar, a leader of the Muslim League, condemned the verdict, calling it interference in Muslim personal law. The practice of instant triple talak affects only the Sunni Muslims, who form the bulk of India's Muslim population. The opinion of Shiite clerics who welcomed the Supreme Court verdict is inconsequential to the debate. And then in China, we are going to hook in now to the all-seeing eye element. And at some point, if our big social media companies and Apple, if they're giving the keys to our ID to China, do you see how it's going to indirectly affect us? It's going to be more than little signs, see something, say something, along the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. This comes from Time Magazine, January 22nd, 2018. Lou, let's find out about how China keeps a close eye on Muslims. And think about this, how this may apply to the worldwide global surveillance system.
China's state surveillance apparatus is trying out a tool in one of its favorite test beds, the restive region of, I guess that's pronounced Xinjiang, the Muslim-dominated villages on China's western frontier, a testing facial recognition systems that alert authorities when targeted people venture more than 1,000 feet beyond designated safe areas, including homes and workplaces. According to a person familiar with the project, who requested anonymity because they aren't authorized to speak to the media. Quote, a system like this is obviously well-suited to controlling people, says Jim Harper, Executive Vice President of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and a founding member of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Data Privacy and Integrity Advisory Committee. He went on to say, quote, "Papers, please," was the symbol of living under tyranny in the past. Now government officials don't need to ask, unquote. The project is another example of how Xinjiang, a region bordering Pakistan and Afghanistan, that's home to about 10 million Muslim ethnic Uyghurs, has become a laboratory for technologies that simultaneously track large groups. Spurred on by President Xi Jinping's orders to strike first against Islamic extremism after deadly attacks involving Uyghurs in 2013 and 2014, as well as reports of some from the group fighting in Syria, the region has become one of the world's most heavily policed places. The Alaska-sized Xinjiang is a land of checkpoints, police stations, and cameras. Local governments have been ordering residents to install satellite tracking systems in their cars. People must submit to facial scans to enter markets, buy fuel, or visit places such as the capital, Urumqi's main bus terminal. Xinjiang's regional publicity department didn't respond to requests for comment, nor did the Ministry of Public Security in Beijing. Facial recognition is a big part of China's two-year-old effort to build a domestic surveillance network. China is on track to represent 46%, or about $8 billion, of the $17.3 billion global video surveillance market by year-end, according to John Cropley, a senior principal analyst at IHS Market. All told, China earmarked 938 billion yuan, $146 billion, for domestic security in 2015, the last time such figures were released, more than its military budget at the time. The Xinjiang Alert Project is led by China Electronics Technology Group, a state-run defense contractor that's turned its experience building military radar and space systems into domestic security initiatives, the person says. The project is part of the company's effort to develop software to collect behavioral data on people to predict terrorist acts before they occur. China Electronics didn't respond to a request for comment. China accelerated its use of technology against terrorism after Uyghurs were blamed for deadly attacks in Tiananmen Square and train stations in Guangzhou and Kunming. Last year, Xi called on law enforcement to, quote, actively use modern scientific and technological measures to safeguard national security and social stability, unquote, the official People's Daily newspaper reported. The Xinjiang alert system is focused on the southern half of the region, the person familiar with it says. That includes Kashgar, an ancient Silk Road junction that Xi envisions playing a key role in his Belt and Road trade initiative. The surveillance project links security cameras in southern Xinjiang to a database of people who've attracted the attention of authorities. Almost four-fifths of southern Xinjiang's population is of Uyghur descent. China's treatment of the ethnic minority, including restrictions on religious observances and the free movement of citizens, has been the subject of frequent criticism by the U.S. and European countries.
See, Lou, I got even because you wanted to take that slow route with the Salak over 3 months. I made you do the article that had all those Chinese names that I didn't have to pronounce. But now, very seriously, back to what's happening here. There's another incident, Lou, isn't there?
That's right. The headline says, ISIS-inspired Utah teen tried to blow up high school police. Blow up high school, police say. By William Rajaness, Fox News, datelined March the 7th, 2018. A Utah teenager on Monday tried to blow up his high school with a homemade bomb, police say. The same student, police said, hoisted a flag supporting the terror group ISIS last month. St. George police said in a statement, quote, "Based on our investigation, we can confirm this was a failed attempt to detonate a homemade explosive. It was also determined that the male had been researching information and expressing interest in ISIS and promoting the organization, unquote. Police arrested and charged the teenager with manufacturing and possessing a weapon of mass destruction. More charges are expected for the vandalism at Hurricane High School, where he destroyed an American flag and spray-painted ISIS is coming on the school's exterior, police said. Because he is a minor, police did not release his identity. The latest incident occurred Monday at Pine View High School in southwestern Utah, where an alert student noticed a backpack emitting smoke in a common area. The student alerted teachers, who evacuated the building. After a bomb-sniffing canine confirmed the explosive was real, bomb techs disarmed the device, which police said could have caused, quote, significant injury or death, unquote. Student Tavian Hancock told St. George News, quote, I saw them looking through the bag, and then they picked it up and ran it outside. It's pretty scary knowing I was around a bomb and walked by a bomb three times. Just kind of, it makes me more aware of my surroundings, unquote. After obtaining a search warrant, police found materials in the teen's home matching those found in the bomb. They also found materials sympathetic to the terror group ISIS. Said one of the students, I was just really scared. Like, all this is serious. On Tuesday, police confirmed the teen is connected to the earlier incident at Hurricane High. He is currently in a detention center awaiting arraignment.
Then we have our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. I believe he's waking up a little bit. He's doing something we like. He was speaking at an event for California law enforcement, and a day after, the Justice Department announced it was filing a lawsuit against the sanctuary city-state over three pieces of legislation that it said interferes with federal immigration policy. In his remarks, Sessions noted worrisome trends as violent crime increased in 2014 and 2015, particularly a surge in homicide and drug availability. He said that a lawful immigration system was part of tackling such trends. And, of course, we have the implication that the state would not implement the national ICE protocols to really pick up these people. And we heard that Governor Jerry Brown, of course, the radical liberal, didn't like all this happening. And Pelosi slammed California ICE raid as unjust and cruel amid outcry over mayor's tip-off to immigrants. Now, we want to give you a look at a real sanctuary city. This is a powerful piece written by Dr. Larry Spargimino, Death in the City, and this city is San Francisco. And you may want to try to get this Prophetic Observer. It's February 2018, and it comes out of Southwest Radio Ministries. And their telephone number is 1-800-652-1144. Of course, they differ with us about the pre-tribulation rapture belief, but they are so right on about so much these days. It's a wonderful ministry. We think very fondly of our dear friend, our late friend, Dr. Noah Hutchings, who passed away several years ago and headed this ministry. Again, their number is 1-800-652-1144. And Lou and I are going to tell you what it's really like there in the sanctuary city, Death in the City. In Lamentations, we read, how did the city sit solitary that was full of people? How has she become as a widow? All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They are become her enemies, Lamentations 1:1-2. The prophet Jeremiah was mourning the destruction of Jerusalem. He had witnessed the destruction of the city and its temple by Nebuchadnezzar's Babylonian armies. Though Jeremiah predicted this would happen, it was nevertheless something that caused him great sorrow. There is another city, actually many other cities, for which we must weep and mourn. They have become sanctuary cities. Their destroyers are radical left-wingers who have turned their cities into garbage heaps of disease and death. In a report by Kira Davis posted on redstate.com, and again, that's redstate.com, Kira Davis, capital K-I-R-A, Davis. We read, San Francisco is swiftly moving from one of America's most beautiful cities to one of America's most troubled cities. The city struggles with crime and the consequences of illegal immigration after declaring themselves a, quote, sanctuary city. The transit authorities, BART, recently announced they would stop providing video evidence of violent attacks on public transportation so as not to, quote, bias citizens against certain ethnic groups. We have to interject, see something, say nothing. Back to the Davis article. Most recently, San Francisco has joined Los Angeles and San Diego as three of the major cities that have caused Governor Jerry Brown to declare a state of emergency due to a hepatitis A epidemic currently brewing in each location. The outbreak can be directly tied to the homeless problem in California, which is only exacerbated by a constant flow of liberal policies that make removing homeless encampments difficult and even allow for the homeless to set up camp in places like the front lawn of Los Angeles City Hall and other public parks.
Citing the ubiquity of human waste, software engineer Jen Wong has mapped the city's most, quote, poop-ridden neighborhoods, unquote. Her project, called Human Wasteland, is a pretty exhaustive listing of reports made by emergency 311 calls. Yes, there is a 311 fecal alert emergency number from 2008 to 2015. European cities were devastated in the mid to late 14th century. Although the bubonic plague, the Black Death, was spread by fleas and black rats, the rats frequented garbage heaps such as are appearing in 10 cities along bike trails and in parks. The living conditions of both urban and rural communities, along with a lack of proper sanitation, weakened the population and contributed to the casualties. It was common practice for people to use chamber pots, which were emptied into open sewers that typically fed into streams and rivers. Historians have noted that displaced people, vagabonds and rootless youths in medieval towns and cities, that is, the homeless, contributed to the unhealthy conditions. Local and state officials that are encouraging sanctuary status are bringing upon the people they serve a horrific plague of monstrous proportions. Open borders are allowing people to come into this country from faraway places, bringing disease and contagion with them. Rocket Man in North Korea can save us missiles and warheads and avoid a war with the United States. The proponents of sanctuary cities and states will soon bring their own form of disaster on America. The purpose of sanitation is to provide a healthy living environment for everyone, to protect natural resources such as surface water and groundwater, and to provide safety, security, and dignity for people who live together in towns and cities. A growing number of people in California and elsewhere are health conscious. They work out, eat right, watch their weight, and try to maintain good health and vigor. Unfortunately, their elected leaders, yes, they put them in office, are working against them. It's time for fence rattlers to get off the fence and come down on the right side. The continual violation of biblical standards of sexual morality, decency, and wholesome living cannot continue much longer without there being dire consequences for everyone. Gay bathhouses, marijuana, public nudity, and a host of other wacko ideas will bring disaster. Do we really want God to wash his hands of our sinful folly and abandon us to our own destructive tendencies? Divine abandonment will be individually and nationally devastating. Living according to biblical standards always produces blessing. While European cities were reeling under the weight of the plague, the Jewish physician Paul Avignus instituted a cleanup movement in the Jewish community by studying and applying the health standards of the Levitical law. The casualty rate dropped in the Jewish community, but devastated other areas. There was such an obvious contrast in the health of the two groups that many outside the Jewish community claimed that the Jews were poisoning them. This growing proliferation of tent cities and an inundation of human fecal matter is creating a situation that looks more and more like what Jesus described in his end-time discourse. In Matthew 24:7, Jesus said, "For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences." The word pestilence is the plural, suggesting a number of diseases and illnesses created by these unhealthy conditions produced by sanctuary policies. Though many mock biblical standards, the Bible gives explicit instructions regarding health and sanitation. Deuteronomy 23:9-14, in summary, indicates that human excrement needs to be buried outside the city. People need to relieve themselves outside the camp. Bring a spade, dig a hole with a spade, and cover the excrement. This is one of the reasons that the Israelites were told that they would enjoy a measure of freedom from the diseases that ravaged the camp of the Egyptians. If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians. That's from Exodus 15:26.
We need to remember that California is an incubator state. What's in California will in a couple of years be common practice in your neck of the woods. That's why we have to be alert to the issues that are raised by the concept of sanctuary cities and sanctuary states. A sanctuary city is a city where illegal aliens, criminals, and gang members can find sanctuary from federal deportation laws. Pro-sanctuary leaders want to reduce the fear of deportation and possible family breakup among people who are in the country illegally. They believe that such people will be more willing to report crimes, use health and social services, and enroll their children in school. Municipal policies in sanctuary areas include prohibiting police and city employees from questioning people about their immigration status and refusing requests by federal immigration authorities to detain people. Sanctuary governments and leaders are lawbreakers. They not only refuse to cooperate with federal law, but actually perpetrate criminal activity. The murder of Kate Steinle on July 1, 2015, made illegal immigration a front burner issue in the 2016 presidential election. While walking with her father and a friend in the Embarcadero district of San Francisco, Steinle was fatally shot by an illegal immigrant who had been deported five times, Jose Inez Garcia Zarate, who initially claimed that he fired at a sea lion with a gun he claims to have found, was only convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm. He was acquitted of all murder and manslaughter charges. President Trump described the verdict as disgraceful. Libertarian policies fueled and energized by political correctness have allowed evil to multiply with impunity. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, we read in Ecclesiastes 8:11, therefore the hearts of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Don't miss the words fully set. Let's look at some hearts that are fully set to do evil. And they get into Fox News reporting that an illegal immigrant began his murder trial for the 2014 killings of two Northern California sheriff's deputies. There is so much here. The sanctuary leaders don't agree with the law, so they fail to enforce it. And Matthew 20:14-12 describes what we're seeing. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The word iniquity is a translation of the word anomos, meaning lawlessness. And because lawlessness shall abound, the love of man shall wax cold. Call 1-800-652-1144, 1-800-652-1144. Ask how you can get this prophetic observer if you want this in full. We gave you most of it. We ran out of time. There's so much that's so important. Tell others about this program. If you value the continuation of America, our beloved republic, people must find out about these hidden compounds and the radical Islam New World Order agenda. Thank you for listening. Good night.